This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:35 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Julian Ng, and with me is Khoo Soo Chuang, and we're going to talk about the biggest business news in the world and locally today as well. Yesterday, we reported that one of the CEOs of Standard Chartered subsidiary was stepping down in Indonesia for allegations of bribery activity. And today, Standard Chartered is in the headlines again, and not for very good news. They are being investigated or warned by regulators in Hong Kong about their role in the IPO of One China Forestry in 2009. And this, Chuang, this is a case that is a very long time ago. Why are they digging this up again?
I don't know. You just have got to imagine that maybe the regulatory approach is really starting to gather steam and much more insight into the inner machinations of financial services institutions, given all the scandals that have been happening. And, you know, of course, China wants to step up its corporate governance, wants to at least step up its image of being cleaner. So you've got to imagine that perhaps this is all related.
Yeah, and I think that there is something to be said about regulatory authorities, which are, I guess, protectors of investors in their respective markets, to hold bankers for what they're saying, right, to being honest salesmen when you're kind of selling a deal like China Forestry, which has had a very checkered and colourful past.
Exactly. The other thing that there's also a sailing Standard Chartered as well, I guess with most other banks as well, is declining financial performances. We just saw yesterday the shares actually fell quite a bit, actually, since reporting that revenue has dropped by 7.5% in both the corporate as well as the institutional division. It's the, you know, according to the Bloomberg, who loves to do this thing, they say that the stock declined by the most since June, because June is, what, 4 or 5 months ago? So it's actually quite a big deal in terms of responses to their financial performance.
I think there's still a very high degree of fear, not to mention hate, for the financial sector right now. I mean, we've just come off talking about how Deutsche Bank has to set aside possibly about $15 billion to pay the U.S. the Department of Justice for their wrongdoings in the financial crisis. And I hear that the latest news is that that has been reduced quite substantially, but still a very substantial portion of fines that's happening there. So still very beleaguered. But I was talking to Dodge Dolan this morning about what's happening in the U.S. markets. Apparently, there seems to be some green shoots of growth around the world. The U.S. is reporting pretty positive data, especially the fact that core inflation is going up after many years. And China also reporting a substantially surprising PMI number for the month of October. But I guess this will take some time to pan out, because we have this other story that Thomson Reuters is cutting 2,000 jobs.
Yeah, that's right. So I, you know, the thing is, I used to work at Thomson Reuters, and I know that it's quite a complex and complicated business, because there's so many divisions and so many pricing points and so many, you know, differing platforms.
What's their business model?
I don't know. It's actually they position themselves as financial data, but there's all kinds of research, there's analytics,
so
there's tools,
data,
there's platforms,
right?
There's, you know, there's terminals and so on and so forth. So from and they also news aggregators, and there's, of course, you know, whole, it's a 150-year-old company, right? You know.
Yeah, so I think they sort of make money from selling research, selling data, as well as news syndication, would you say?
News syndication, that's right.
Yeah.
So they sell terminals on the back of the, you know, the numbers, the data, the research, and of course the stories as well. So for them to have basically, you know, canned 2,000 people, it's not the first time. But they also, I guess, more pertinently wanting to get rid of their, one of their divisions for $3.55 billion.
Yeah, I think this is interesting, because the job cutting intention is only a part of the $200 to $250 million streamlining of the business, but the sale of the IP and what they call the IP and science business to buyout groups like Onex and Baring Private Equity, that's $3.5 billion.
Exactly, and that, not that long ago, I think 2008, when I used to work there, Reuters was Reuters, and it wasn't known as Thomson Reuters. So of course, Thomson came in from Canada, and they bought up the, you know, the business. So there have been a whole bunch of M&As and restructurings since then.
Baring Asia, which is one of the buyers, said that there would be a shift towards more knowledge-driven economies. And they believe that the outlook for the business is underpinned by this increasing knowledge activity.
Yeah, we kind of know that, right?
Hasn't it always been the case?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
well, I guess, you know, moving along the whole corporate earnings theme to, you know, Shell and BP. Now, they've both reported third quarter earnings. And I guess, you know, when you look at the signs of life in the energy sector, you really got to understand that this is very situational because quarterly earnings are exactly that. They just have a snapshot of 3 months in terms of their corporate earnings. And we know that in the wake of the OPEC discussions on cutting production, oil prices have recovered to about the $48-$52 barrels. But the thing is, and this is very pertinent because it's all about the outlook statement. It's not just about the 3 months that have just gone by. It's all about what they think is going to go ahead. And just as how Stanchart earlier, you know, we talked about how the shares dropped. They also, I mean, Stanchart warned that the outlook is not as good as people think it might be. Same for energy companies, because both Shell and BP have said that don't expect a strong rebound in prices. It's probably going to stay, you know, prices at about the low 50s in 2017. And they're also going to be cutting capital spend. So it's not as if just because they've done well these past three months, it means as if it's going to go on a tear. It's not.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the analysts that we speak to and we read of as well are talking about making buys into the oil majors in the US. And I think that the discussions that will come out of OPEC, whether they have a deal or not, that would probably be just icing on the cake. If oil prices go up substantially, then they will make more money. But at the moment, what they have done is that they have cut a lot of costs. They have rolled back a lot of their production ambitions. And that's why you see profits turning around quite a bit. But, you know, Goldman Sachs, that the people who brought you $200 oil forecast a few years ago, and now they're saying that oil may head back towards $40 if the OPEC doesn't come out with a deal.
Well, so I apologize for putting in the story about Goldman Sachs because they're not to be believed at any cost. But the trend is accurate because if OPEC and non-OPEC members fail to reach a consensus in terms of productivity and production cuts, which is entirely indicative right now because, I mean, look, I mean the Iranians have just come back to the oil markets and it's not as if they're going to agree to a production cut right now and not as if there's been some kind of ratio allocated to each nation's contribution to the global energy pie. So according to Goldman's, because of this impasse essentially on basically cutting production, they don't think that oil prices will recover anytime soon. And they actually see that the low 40s will be on the horizon.
I think the key figure to keep in mind is $45 per barrel. And that is
our assumption, is it?
That we have put into the budget. Anything at 40 or below would pressure the budget quite substantially. And talking about pressure, of course, the elections in the United States is upon us. I think that's November 8th, right? Trump has narrowed Hillary Clinton's lead.
Yeah, so this is amazing because we've been following the Podesta emails and leaks, and I think right now the count is at something like 46,000 emails having been, you know, publicly disclosed in terms of Hillary Clinton's transgressions using government servers and all kinds of deals that she's done. So obviously, you know, this has given Donald Trump a bit of a fillip in the race, and he now leads bizarrely, intriguingly, and I guess distressingly.
Oh,
leading? He's leading by 1 point, apparently. So, that's sending all kinds of tremors because the markets have all been forecasting a Clinton victory. And, of course, you know, it's the lesser of the two evils.
And so these are people's actual answers. At least 40-something percent of Americans won Trump to be the president. I'm just wondering, it's scary. It's a scary position. But who are we to say that 40% of the people in America are wrong, right? We can say that, though. We can say, right?
I guess from our viewpoint, you look at it, America is the richest country in the world. It is at least the most, well, one of the most democratic. It's the beacon of free and fair, you know, fairness. And these two individuals are the best you can come up with? Come on, once a criminal, essentially, allegedly.
I'm not sure who you're speaking of.
And the other's got a bad haircut, small hands, and he's a bigot, masochist, and, all kinds of stuff, right? So come on.
Scary world we're living in.
Scary world we live in.
Well, it's coming up to 7:45 in the morning, and I'm going to tell you who's coming up on the Breakfast Grill. We have a very special guest, as well as more domestic business news, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.